relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. Welcome, dear friends, the second episode of the Manhood Hour, where we devote the whole hour to discussion of the state of man, what has happened to those who are meant to protect our civilization, and how we can rediscover those values and spread them across America. I can't imagine a better guest to discuss these issues than a founding member of Delta Force, a legend in the military community. He is now executive vice president for an incredibly important organization. It's the Family Research Council. And we are honored to have with us today Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin.
Seb, it is great to be with you today. Thanks for having me on.
And you're joining us from your big annual event. Thank you for taking time to talk to us about an issue that I know is incredibly close to your heart. When we planned this new series, we didn't know what General Boykin was up to, but it, of course, is a fabulous confluence that imminently your latest book is about to be released. Let's put it up on the screen. Perfect, perfect timing for us. Courageous, Strong and Courageous, A Call to Biblical Manhood. That is exactly what we are going to be discussing today. But first, for those who are not familiar with your career, how you ended up in charge of intelligence in the DOD, what you did in uniform as well, tell us a little bit about Jerry Boykin's path in life. And for those who are interested in those kinds of things, your service in Delta Force and what Delta Force really is, as much as you can tell us.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I graduated from Virginia Tech in 1970, where I was in the Corps of Cadets. I played football up there, and I went immediately into the Army as soon as I graduated. I took a commission as a second lieutenant, and I was an infantry officer. And I served tours in the infantry until 1978, and that included some time in Vietnam. And in 78, I was asked to try out for the Delta Force, not knowing what it was or what it would ultimately wind up being. And I made it through that and spent 13 years with the Delta Force. And then after I got promoted to Brigadier General, I went off to the CIA and did a tour at CIA for a couple of years. And then back to command all the Green Berets and then the Special Forces School. I was a commandant of that. And then Don Rumsfeld brought me up to Washington to serve my last 4 years as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. And that was, even though it was in Washington, that was a good way to go out. And I learned a lot about the intelligence community that I did not know. And even though I had spent time in that community at CIA. And so I've learned a great deal in that 36 and a half years that I served. But more importantly, I have a sense of accomplishment for having served my country, which means an awfully lot to me and to my family as well.
36 years in the Army. Tell us a little bit about those founding years, those formative years of Delta Force. What was the mission and what kind of things were you engaged in?
Yeah, if you remember the Munich massacre, that's when the U.S. government started asking questions about, do we have a counterterror unit? And the answer was not good. So Jimmy Carter eventually asked that question, and he said, what if we had to go do what the Germans had to do in Mogadishu, Somalia, which was go in and rescue a plane load of German hostages that had been captured by an Islamic terrorist group right there on the tarmac in Mogadishu, Somalia? And the answer was ultimately that, no, we don't have the capability. So he said, I want to create that capability. Well, stop and think about this. The military does not necessarily look for surgical operations. The military is about firepower. But here we were in a dilemma, because we had sort of grown up in the military saying, bring all you have and apply it liberally, meaning our artillery, our small arms, our combat aircraft and all that. And then all of a sudden we're rescuing hostages, but we can't use all that firepower. We have to be very surgical in doing that. And so we had to rely on organizations like the FBI and other federal agencies that had SWAT teams that to help us to learn how to scale back in terms of applying firepower. But our mission initially was to rescue hostages, but with a broader ultimate capability of counterterror operations in the broadest context. That meant finding people and killing or capturing them, which we did a lot of, they continue to do a lot of today, and then doing clandestine type work and covert when called by the CIA to support them, and so we trained for all of that, and but we had no playbooks. And Seb, I will tell you that we would sit down with our senior non-commissioned officers on a Friday afternoon. I mean, these were men. These were really men. This is a good topic for today. We would sit down, and each man would reflect on his experience in certain fields, and we would plan next week's training schedule. Next week's training schedule. And then somebody would be responsible for gathering all the logistics. We'd go through that the next Friday. We would start again. And we were rolling our own. We were doing this without any roadmap whatsoever. But you know what? That was a heck of a good way to start, because we built not only a training program and a readiness program, but we built a lot of confidence in our own people that we could figure things out. We could problem solve. We could do the right analysis and all.
Well, thank you for being part of that initial effort to keep Americans safe, and for building it, and for all your service. The focus is manhood today. I have five questions I ask all my guests. The first one is, give us a diagnosis. What is the state of masculinity and manhood today in America? Where are we at, General?
Yeah, I think we're in a very sad situation. I think that men are confused today as to what they're really supposed to be. I think that society has so hammered our men with this notion that, first of all, that you can be a female if you want to, regardless of what your genitalia says. And that's very confusing as men are growing up, being told that they've got to use the proper pronouns and they've got to address people in the correct way and so forth. So I think that men are confused today about what they really are, what they've been called to be, and what their role is in America. And I think that's just destroying us. And you've got these universities like Brown University, and it's not the only one. It was really the first. They started teaching the classes called Overcoming Toxic Masculinity. Masculinity is not toxic when practiced according to the Word of God. According to the Bible, masculinity is not toxic. And then if you look at the fact that the Communist Party USA told us in 1958 in the book The Naked Communist that they were going to go after families, but they were going to target the men in order to bring the families down. So men are targeted today with all kinds of stuff, not the least of which is things like pornography, which is separating men from their families. It's destroying families. And all you have to do is ask any pastor in the country, and he'll tell you that it's a growing problem, and it's causing marriages to break up. So that means there are no fathers in the home. That means that American society is coming apart because the men are being distracted and pulled away from where they should be, which is at home, providing for that family, providing the leadership and the guidance for that family.
The book is Strong and Courageous. We're talking to Delta Force founding member, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin of the Family Research Council. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is the Manhood Hour. If you want to guarantee that you never miss any one of our exclusive interviews, our one-on-one discussions, make sure you are subscribed. Go to your favorite podcast platform. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka. It's absolutely free. Write us a 5-star review. It does help with those dastardly algorithms. And then, of course, share the links with all your friends. Because together, if we spread the truth, we can save our republic and our civilization. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bedsheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. Part and parcel of being a true man is to speak truth. One individual who spoke truth at the highest level of our nation was, of course, the great Ronald Reagan.
So in your discussions of the nuclear freeze proposals, I urge you to beware the temptation of pride, the temptation of blithely declaring yourselves above it all and label both sides equally at fault. To ignore the facts of history and the aggressive impulses of an evil empire, to simply call the arms race a giant misunderstanding, and thereby remove yourself from the struggle between right and wrong and good and evil.
He paid a price for using truthful language, the evil empire. However, eventually he was proven right, and he won the conflict with that evil empire. Truth has to be part of our commitment as men. General Boykin, where do you see the biggest assault on manhood? Is it the first wave of feminism? Is it the lack of leadership in our churches? Where is, to use a military term, the center of gravity of our assault on manhood today?
Yeah, I think that there's really a couple of things. One is, I think that the LGBT agenda has become so powerful in America that men are natural targets to go after, because if you can not only get the men out of the home, but if you can confuse the men enough that they're not fulfilling their role. And I write about the five roles in my original book, Man to Man, the five things that a man is supposed to be biblically. And if you can get the man to stop doing those things, then you can destroy the family, which ultimately destroys the country. So I think that's the very beginning of this, is really the power and the influence of the LGBT community in America today.
What does it mean for you to be a man? Can you describe some of those pillars, those five pillars from man to man? For example, the need to be prepared to protect the vulnerable. Give us General Boykin's definition of being a man.
Yeah, first of all, a man is called to be a provider. Now, we obviously understand that a man provides for the fiscal needs of the family, the monetary needs. But a man provides a lot more than that. One of the things that a man provides is he provides direction. He provides direction to the family. And that's in the second book that's coming out on the 21st, Strong and Courageous. We talk about Joshua. Joshua is my favorite person in the Bible. And Joshua provided something there at the end of his life that it should be a lesson to everybody. And that is Joshua stood up in the desert, led all the Israelite leadership out into the desert, preached his own epitaph, and then he came to the end, and he said to all the assembled people there, he said, choose you this day which God you're going to serve, whether it's the God of the of your fathers, which they worshipped on the other side of the Euphrates River, or it's the God of the Amorites in whose land you stand, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He was providing direction for his family. He was providing direction for generations to come. And that's something that families are missing today because the men do not see the need and the imperative to provide that kind of leadership, which means they've got to have a vision. Men provide vision. So there's a lot more that a man provides. And then the other thing I'll tell you is a man provides identity. I know my dad did not have a high school education, but as we would drive 80 miles to my grandmother's house to see his family there, he would review for me who my ancestors were. And again, I don't even think he realized the power of what he was doing. When he was giving me an identity, he was making sure I knew where I came from and knew who I was representing as the next generation. So a man provides that identity as well. A man is also a protector. And needless to say, I'm a big Second Amendment person, and my wife is too. But I have a responsibility to protect what I hold dear. And that includes not just my family, but it includes my values. And that includes, for example, the life of the unborn. I'm a provider. I'm a protector. I have to go out and do all that I can to, if I really believe in the sanctity of life, I have to go out and get involved somewhere. And let me say to all of your men that'll hear this and see this, one of the things you ought to be looking at right now, based on this ruling by the Supreme Court, is you ought to be looking at how you can help crisis pregnancy centers, how you can help adoption agencies and centers. The third thing is a man is a battle buddy. And those of us who have been in the military, we understand the concept of having a battle buddy, having another man in your life and you being the man in his life that you can go to when you are confused, you're afraid, you're struggling. You can go to him and you can talk to him, and he's not going to compromise you, and you're going to be by him, you're going to stand by him. And you know, I wrote up two men in the Black Hawk Down event for the Medals of Honor because those two men saw their battle buddies go in on a crash of the second helicopter in Mogadishu. Second helicopter. They saw them go in, Randy Shugart and Gary Gordon, and they absolutely were adamant that they were going in. It didn't matter how much danger there was on that ground there with Somalis coming from every direction. They were going in, and they were going to get their battle buddies out of that crash, no matter what it took. And they did. They got them out of the crash. Unfortunately, they all died except one man, the co-pilot of the aircraft. And he lived to tell us the story, and they got the Medals of Honor for that. But that's the kind of intimate relationship you have to have with a man. A man is an instructor. That's the fourth thing. A man's an instructor. He's a teacher. And one of the things, and I'm going to say one thing here that people may look at me and say, did you say that right? You need to let your children, as the man of the home, you need to let them endure hardship. Now, you know, I raised three boys, and I used to get them up early in the morning, and I mean cold days, and I'd take them out and put them in a duck blind, and that wind would howl, and I'd go take them out and put them in a tree stand They wouldn't even see a deer all day, but nonetheless, I'd take them up on the Appalachian Trail for days, and I'd walk them with backpacks, and the weather didn't matter. And you know that my son made it through one of the toughest ranger school classes in the whole time the ranger department has been operating, and he told me it was because he knew he could make it because he had endured hardship before.
Yeah,
so we've got to let our kids endure hardship and let them understand their consequences to the decisions they make. And then finally, the last thing is a man is a chaplain. A man's got to be a chaplain. He's got to be the chaplain in the home. And one of the things that we do when we do our men's conferences, as the chaplain, every man, when his family is gathered together and his children and grandchildren are with him, every man should lay his hands on their head and give them a father's blessing, a father's affirmation. You know how many men are running around this country today that have never had a man affirm them?
I have seen it in my son's friend circle, what happens when a young man isn't given that affirmation, and it is a sad, sad thing. The book, Order It Right Now, is Strong and Courageous. We are talking to Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin of the Family Research Council. Uncle Tom 2 is the eye-opening documentary everyone in America should see. Sebastian Gorka here, and Uncle Tom 2 offers a compelling and brave analysis of the true history of Black America, the cultural shift from prosperity, integrity, and faith to the current perceived state of anger, discontent, and victimhood. Uncle Tom 2 offers historical footage, photos, correspondence, and data to reveal the genuine strides of Black America in the 20th century, the deliberate Marxist strategy to create racial tension and replace God with government, the NAACP's sinister agenda, the fall of Black Harlem, the truth behind Black Lives Matter, and the demoralization of America for political power. Don't miss Uncle Tom 2 from executive producer Larry Elder and director Justin Malone, with Brandon Tatum, Vodi Bocum, and Chad O'Jackson. Watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD now at salemnow.com. That's salemnow.com, salemnow.com. Let me just reiterate what you just said, General, just some of the things that are so incredibly helpful that you've crystallized them for us. What a man has to be a provider, has to be a protector, has to provide direction for his family, a vision, has to provide identity, and has to be a battle buddy and a chaplain. Incredible words. It's clear that your father was a large part of who you are today. Was there anything else or anybody else that was crucial for shaping your understanding of your role in the world? Was there a mentor? We had Jack Carr from the SEALs tell us about how literature, the great stories of heroism, were very important to him. Tell us how you imbibed, outside of your father, your understanding of what it is to be a man.
Yeah, you know, I had a football coach up at Virginia Tech, and he went on, when he left there, he went on to coach at Liberty University, but he was a man that lived his faith and was an example of a rugged, tough man, but he was okay with sharing with you his faith. And I, at that time, I was not following the Lord, but I was so impressed by his example that I think that he was part of what ultimately became my faith journey. And I think that it all started in the home with my parents. But, you know, a lot of times you ignore what your parents say, but then you see another man doing exactly what you know you want to emulate. You just don't know how to get there. So I had that football coach, and he was a great influence in my life.
You've mentioned faith. You've mentioned being a pastor. Can you be a man? Can you defend our civilization without understanding the eternal truths in the Bible, sir?
Yeah. Let's go back and answer your question this way. Look at the history of the founding of America. Look at the fact that on the 3rd of July, 56 men, 1775 or 76. 15 men, or I'm sorry, 56 men came into Philadelphia to take a vote. And they voted to separate from the Crown of England, which means they took a huge risk. They drew a big bullseye on their own chest because they were going to be hanged as spies, or not spies, but as traitors to the Crown of England if they didn't win the Revolutionary War. Now, those men had one thing in common, and that is they were all men of faith. They did not share the same theology. They could disagree on a lot of issues. And regardless of how the media and the modern day revisionist historians try to tell you that Thomas Jefferson was a deist, I suggest you go back and read David Barton's book, The Jefferson Lies, which he debunks a lot of the stuff that's told about him. So those 56 men had something in common, and that is that they were men of faith. And then you look at the history of America, the Black Robe Regiment, which were the pastors in the colonies that wore the black vestments. And the British said after the war, if it had not been for that Black Robe Regiment, those colonies would still be under the Crown of England. Well, these were men of faith. These were men of the cloth. And many of them, not only did they preach sermons that really set the stage for us to separate ourselves, but they also led military forces. They led units. They led regiments. And John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg from right over in the Shenandoah Valley over there was a sterling example. He stood up in his pulpit on the 26th of January, 1776, and he preached from Ecclesiastes 3, and he talked about a season for all things, and he came to the end of his sermon, and he said, the Bible tells us there's a time to preach and a time to pray. And the time for me to preach has gone away. And he pulled off his black robe and he revealed the uniform of a colonel of the 8th Virginia Militia. George Washington had commissioned him personally only a couple of days before. And he walked out the back of the church, mounted his horse, and he said, who among you men will ride with me in the cause of liberty? Now, I don't think anybody should doubt in at all that the foundations of America were built by people of faith.
Yeah.
Now, we've strayed a lot. But well, let it be recognized that our foundations came from people of the Christian faith.
What a wonderful story. You're listening to The Manhood Hour with me, Sebastian Gorka, and General Jerry Boykin, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Are you in daily pain? Have you tried everything else and failed to find relief? If that's your story, try this 100% drug-free product that is liberating 500,000 Americans right now, me included. Yes, I had a low back pain issue that plagued me for 9 years, almost a decade. I took Relief Factor, and 2 weeks later, I was pain-free, and I'm still pain-free more than 3.5 years later. Order your 3-week quick starter pack right now at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. Call 800-500-8384 or just go to relieffactor.com. That's 800-500-8384. Relieffactor.com. Relieffactor.com. Sadly, General, in the last 3 years, I've come to the realization, given what America did in response to COVID, that one of the greatest problems we face is simply a lack of courage. We see what radicals are doing to this nation. It's not the external threat of communism, it's the internal threat of communism. We see the deep state using the FBI, the DOJ to target parents at school board meetings, to issue subpoenas against 40 people associated with President Trump, arresting people like Peter Navarro on a misdemeanor and putting him in leg shackles. What do you say to those who are simply browbeaten by all of this and who say that it's just not worth it, I can't risk it, I can't risk my job, I'm going to keep my head down and just keep quiet? What do you say to the men out there who say politics, it's just too dangerous?
Yeah, Let me say a couple of things. One is I thank you for bringing out the point that this administration has weaponized just about every entity within the federal government, and it's very sad. But this is not the first time. Obama did the same thing. He weaponized the IRS, the FBI, the intelligence community, and now Biden has done the same thing. So, but that said, you know, if you go back and, again, look at military history, you'll find out that George Patton made a statement that when you stop and think about it and you apply it to today's world, it's really very true. And Patton said, moral courage is the most required and the least abundant characteristic in men. Now, think about that. Moral courage. The courage to stand for what you believe in. And then if you go back and look at some of the stories of the people that demonstrated incredible courage, like at Leyte Gulf, when old Red Newman, the battalion or regimental commander, jumped up on the beach when they were all pinned down, jumped up with machine guns firing from every direction, and he said, get off this beach, follow me. That's where the infantry motto came from, follow me. That kind of courage does not have to be mustered just in battle. That kind of courage has to be mustered in everyday life and standing against the evil. And I'm not here to preach a sermon, but if you look at Psalms 94, verse 16, it says, who will take a stand against this evil for me? Who will rise up against these doers of iniquity? And that is talking to us. It is talking not exclusively, but primarily to us men, to find our courage and to stand against the evil in this land. And too many men, you laid it out, too many men say it's just too hard. It's just too hard. I'm going to take the easy way out. And Seb, that includes pastors.
Yeah. You just read my mind. My next question, sir, is going to be, are you satisfied with what the pastors in America did under COVID?
Not at all. I'm not. And I think that many of them, I think a lot of churches are not going to ever be what they were before, and many of them are just going to crumble because the pastors did not have the courage to stand. Look, I'm headed out this week to California to speak in a Calvary chapel where that pastor, and most of America has heard his name, is Rob McCoy, where he just simply refused to close his church. And if you look at all these churches that refused to close, they said no. They might have closed for a couple of weeks, and then they said, wait a minute, people still need the gospel. And so they open back up. And if you look at those churches, what you find out is that just about every one of them has grown exponentially. And there's one that I spoke in that you just saw this guy, this pastor. His name is Mike McClure. He was on Fox News last week because he had won a lawsuit where they had fined him about $3 million because he refused to close his church in San Jose, California. And when I got out there to speak at his church about a year ago, I said, how many sermons do I have to speak? He said, you're going to speak three times. I said, oh my gosh. I said, I didn't realize you were that big. And he said, well, he said, we had about 500 people going into COVID. He said, today we have about 2,500.
Wow.
Why? Wow. Why is that? It is because he continued to provide spiritual guidance, spiritual counsel, spiritual comfort, and while others closed up and basically, you know, waited for everything to pass, which if you do that, it's never going to pass. There's always going to be a reason that you can find not to do the right thing, and that is that's what I think we've seen happen with a lot of these churches.
let's stop for a moment and talk about, since you were commanded Fort Bragg, you were the commandant at the Special Warfare, the JFK School. I still maintain my relationship with the SWIC school, and I'm hearing very disturbing things. I'm hearing the political intrusion above our warfighters and a distortion of their job. How worried are you that what we're witnessing on the streets of America is affecting our fighting forces as well?
I'm going to say something here that, and I don't care who is offended by it, but the leadership of our military today is incompetent. They're just incompetent because they've given over to a focus on everything but readiness of our military. You know, Seb, you know, because you've been in the military, and you know that on the battlefield, the equalizer on the battlefield is unity and purpose. You are unified. You're one. You fight for each other. And then purpose. You have a purpose. You have a real purpose for why you're out there risking your life. See, you don't want a military army. I mean, a mercenary army. You want a military that is driven by a purpose. And in our case, that is our obligations to the Constitution of the United States. And I think that it's really sad now that we are dividing our people up into two groups, and we're telling them, all of you over here are oppressors, and you over here are the ones they've oppressed. Does that build unity?
No.
Does that build unity? It doesn't build unity at all. Look at the Ukrainians. Why are the Ukrainians being so successful? It's not just American technology. They're being successful because they're unified. And because they have a purpose, and that purpose is to defend their homelands, to defend the future of their families.
Yeah, it's fascinating you say that, talking to those who, even the ethnic Russians in Ukraine, now don't want to have anything to do with the invading forces from Moscow. And there's unity between different communities in Ukraine fighting for their country. The book is, you've got to get it right now, Strong and Courageous. This is America First, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. If you're in daily pain, if you've tried everything else and failed to find relief, do yourself a favor. What have you got to lose except the pain? Order the 3-week quick starter pack of ReliefFactor.com at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough. You deserve to know. Find out today. ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. That number again, 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com. Two more questions for you, sir. Firstly, are you an optimist or are you a pessimist when it comes to our capacity to revivify and to save Western manhood and masculinity?
No, I'm optimistic, and I look at the picture more broadly than just masculinity, and I look at it in terms of what are people getting tired of, what are people saying no to now, and all you have to do is look at the state of Virginia, look at Loudoun County, where mothers stood up and said, no, that's enough, we're not going to do this anymore. And it basically turned the entire state around. I think that's happening with men now, because I'm talking to men at the conferences that we run. I'm talking to men that are really fed up with what they're seeing. They realize they're under attack. They realize that they have personally not been what they were called to be. So I'm encouraged in that they're recognizing it. They're recognizing that the biggest lie in the world is a lie that industry in America has bought into, and that is, regardless of your genitalia, you can be whatever you want to be. You can be whatever gender, or you can be no gender at all. And that is a big lie. And we've gotten so much of America to buy into it, but now people are getting disgusted with that. They're getting fed up with it, and they're beginning to admit that this is stupid, it's insanity, all these pronouns and nonsense is destroying our culture. So I am encouraged because I see people waking up and looking for somebody to lead, and that's where the men have got to step in at the family level, at the church level, at the business level, at all levels. Men have got to step in and take the lead and say, let's work together and we'll get through this.
It's crucial because if not you, and if not now, then who? It's up to you as a father, as a grandfather. Let me ask you the last question is, what should fathers, what should grandfathers be telling their sons? Beyond getting them out into the duck blind before the sun comes up, in the case of my children, getting them out onto the water at 5 a.m. when they were rowing for their high school in the cold winter. Give us a piece of advice. What should fathers and grandfathers be saying to their sons?
You know what I think, Sebastian, this may come as a surprise, but I think the most important thing we can do with our sons and our grandsons is share American history with them. They missed that in the public schools if they went to a public school. And it is so important for them to understand who we are as a nation, and that understanding comes through the sharing of history. Yeah. So I say this at our men's conferences. I say, read history. Read history every night and share that history with your children and your grandchildren and with those that are in your inner circle. Share that with them. So don't overlook the importance and the power of history. And unfortunately, I think that we have a tendency to do that.
We do. Well, God bless you, sir. You are an exemplar to others. Please keep doing what you do. God bless you in all your efforts at the Family Research Council with your ministry and with your latest book. Please, everybody, order it right now. It is essential reading for those who wish to save our civilization. Strong and Courageous, A Call to Biblical Manhood. And of course, prior to that, the book Man to Man. Follow him at General Boykin on Twitter and at the Family Research Council. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in, and stay frosty. And it is, of course, Friday. So let's end with the words of my former employer, the 45th President of the United States.
We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down. We will never, ever surrender. My fellow Americans, our movement is far from over. In fact, our fight has only just begun.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
You don't want to be somewhere where the spotlight is.
Yeah.
You want to try to keep it as down low as possible. A lot of this is just...
No, I get it. I just, like I said...
Stuff that we don't...
tell people, because what we don't want to do is attract attention. We don't want the media.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even know where we're going when they tell us.
I get the whole secrecy and all this shit, but this is even about my secret.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And why? You know why?
You know why.
Yeah, I know, but why? Why? Yeah.
Come on.
No, but what's the big secret? Everybody knows it's happening.
You know why? Because I get out, the government's betraying the Americans.
If this gets out, they'll know the government is betraying the American people. Happy Friday, dear friends. This is America First. That's perhaps the most powerful clip I've played on this show since we launched 3.5 years ago. Local New York police intercepting an unmarked jetliner being flown by contractors from here in Virginia who worked for the CIA, flying illegal immigrants into Westchester County under the cover of darkness after that airport was closed. That's why the police rolled up and said, "What the hell are you doing here? The airport's closed." Well, we don't want anybody to know what we're doing because Biden's flying them across the country. But the mainstream media didn't want to talk about illegal aliens, the 2 million that we know of that have crossed into this nation since Biden swore his oath of office as the commander in chief. But now they do in the last 48 hours. It's strangely become a topic. Even the individual with the very strange haircut, Chuck Todd, had his own spin on illegal immigrants, 53 of them, being bused to Martha's Vineyard. Cut to.
And it's all due to treating people as political pawns, leaving some migrants who might have been misled to believe they were going elsewhere, as reported by NPR, on a literal island that doesn't have any infrastructure designed to help them at all. In a word, it's inhumane.
No infrastructure. What do you mean, Chuck, that they don't have cages like Obama had for them at the detention facilities? All they have is very, very tony wine clubs, you know, wine bars and country clubs. An island that can take 220,000 people in the summertime, which is now empty since its fall. They don't have the infrastructure. Or is it because they don't have the infrastructure for Hispanics? And you're racist. Just like Obama, who has his 8-bedroom mansion on Martha's Vineyard. Tucker Carlson had a very good question for the Obamas. Play cut.
Because a plane load of highly diverse immigrants arrived on Martha's Vineyard to join the Obamas. But the Obamas didn't welcome them. There was not a word from Barack or Michelle Obama. Barack wasn't waiting at the airport to greet the diversifiers with flowers. He didn't issue a statement of congratulations. He didn't invite a single Venezuelan to his home. How come? Could it be that Barack Obama isn't really, actually, in real life, in favor of diversity at all? Could it be that Barack Obama strongly prefers blonde SoulCycle moms in Lululemon to sweaty third world campesinos in dirty work pants? Could it be? We can't say. But we can tell you that if you want to find out what people really think, go ahead and ignore what they say and watch how they live. And by that measure, the one that matters, Barack and Michelle Obama are every bit as bigoted as any board member at any restricted country club in the Deep South, assuming those still exist.
Those people? They're not dating my daughter, I can tell you that.
So in other words, we learned this week that Barack Obama really is a racist, and not in the way you've always assumed. Obama may hate white people, he certainly seems to, but he also demands to live around them, and only them.
Isn't that weird? After he leaves the White House, he buys a mansion in an almost exclusively white part of America where the only Hispanics and black people you'll see are the people cleaning the toilets, raking the leaves, and fixing your plumbing? Is he the first white supremacist black president? If they can call Larry Elder the black face of white supremacy, how about somebody who truly is a racist? Why didn't he move to Chicago or Detroit? Why didn't he buy out a burnt factory in Detroit and turn it into a mansion Strange that he didn't go back to Chicago and hang out with his buddies, Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn, the convicted terrorist in whose living room he launched his senatorial campaign. So it's inhuman to fly people on a jet to Martha's Vineyard. But it's not inhuman to do what happened to them afterwards. I was working this morning when somebody texted me, Ted, you know who you are, no last names, you're a patriot, you work in the, I'll just say the judicial arena. And he said, I'm listening to Breitbart right now, and you need to talk about this on your show, and Ted's right. A father of a soldier serving at Joint Base Cape Cod informed the listeners to Breitbart Sirius XM, and now I see it. I mean, I tweeted this out immediately. Now I saw footage just an hour ago on Fox. It has been confirmed that the, I guess what, the racists on Martha's Vineyard, the people who run Massachusetts, the Democrats who hate people from Venezuela if they're not cleaning their toilets, have shipped the 53 illegal aliens that were flown to Martha's Vineyard to Joint Base Cape Cod. Yeah. They're not allowed to stay in fashionable, upscale Martha's Vineyard. They're so tolerant that they've shipped them off to a camp. Who are the real racists? Who are the people putting them behind chain link fences now on a military base guarded by people carrying M16s and M4s? I'm waiting for AOC to go to Joint Base Camp Cod. You know, that thing she did in front of that DHS facility in her white blouse and white pants, holding her knees and doing that fake cry. Where are you now, AOC? Why aren't you getting in your Tesla? Your oh-so-fancy Tesla with your white boyfriend and driving to Joint Base Cape Cod. Are you going to stand there in front of the MPs at the front gate and fake cry because the illegal aliens have been shipped there by the fascists that run Massachusetts and the white millionaires of Martha's Vineyard? You know what really is humane? 53 illegal aliens, including three children, who were cooked to death in the back of an 18-wheeler in Texas. Yeah, I'd say that's humane. Didn't see you cry about them because you don't give a crap. Because now they can't vote for you. They can't be amnestied and given a voter ID card because they're dead. Well, the hundreds that have been killed crossing the Rio Grande because you want to buy yourself an electoral base. You don't give a crap about them either. Oh, but if they show up in Chicago, in Manhattan or Martha's Vineyard, ship them out straight away. Because that's how tolerant you are. The real fascists, the real racists, they're in the Democrat Party. The birthplace of the KKK and every Jim Crow law. Okay, it's Friday. Let's have a bit of fun. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you live from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Are you subscribed? Are you sure of never missing any of our one-on-ones? Go right now to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. It's free! Leave us a 5-star review. It matters. And then share the links, because we have got to crush these bastards.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.